The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Therefore, be it resolved that the members of this House of Assembly recognize John's Lunch co-owner Fotis Fatouris and his staff on this well-earned accolade and their commitment for providing hearty fare for more than 40 years. Mr. Speaker, I ask for waiver of notice and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? All those in favor say aye. All those against say nay. Motion is carried. Orders of the day, oral questions put by members to ministers. The time now is 1:04. We will finish at 2:04. I will now recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in 2010, the Premier gave Daewoo Shipbuilding and Marine Engineering $60 million and took a 49% stake in the company, Mr. Speaker. Since that time, the orders at DSDN Steel Towers never materialized. Now, 3 years later and $60 million later, DSTN has hardly lived up to the 500 jobs the Premier had bragged about and promised. Mr. Speaker, after $60 million, will the Premier tell Nova Scotians exactly how many people are currently employed at DSTN in Trenton?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, fortunately, this is a government that is focused on, in fact, creating employment and creating jobs. We have transitioned what was the old plant in Trenton to a new one. We're proud to say that they have received a new contract to build additional towers. You know, it's insulting for the member from Dartmouth, Cape Breton South. You know, I know he hasn't been in the House much, Mr. Speaker, but the reality is that here we are focused on creating jobs in Nova Scotia, and that's what the investment in DSTN is doing.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, those jobs must be somewhere else in Daewoo's operations because they're sure not here in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in 2010, the Premier told Nova Scotians this $60 million would result in 500 new jobs at this plant, Mr. Speaker. In fact, Mr. Speaker, the Premier insisted that DSTN would produce between 200 and 250 wind turbines per year. Since that time, we've seen DSTN has produced only 20, Mr. Speaker, turbines. And all we have seen employment, Mr. Speaker, has been layoffs instead of job growth. The wind business is unfolding so poorly that DSTN is now expanding into Halifax and away from wind, into oil and gas, heavy industrial fabrication and shipbuilding, Mr. Speaker. DSTN will now be competing with companies who aren't subsidized by taxpayers to the tune of $60 million. So my question to the Premier, why is the Premier using public money to compete against private businesses yet again?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm amazed that the Leader of the Opposition can stand up and can try and justify the fact that they have no economic development policy whatsoever by criticizing the work and the jobs of ordinary Nova Scotians who rely on companies like DSTN for their livelihood, to support their families. There's more than 100 people working at DSTN now. They have a new contract. Yes, they are expanding. Yes, they're expanding their work, Mr. Speaker, we're happy to see them doing it.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this caucus has stood with Nova Scotia workers. Well, that government has been taking public money, Mr. Speaker.
been taking public money to give to corporations to spend everywhere else, Mr. Speaker, but here in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, those 500 jobs, Mr. Enough. Speaker, that the Premier talked about
That's enough.
2 years ago, Mr. Speaker, are now 100, Mr. Speaker, going in the wrong direction. Right. When is he going to stand up for Nova Scotia workers and stop sending our money offshore and create jobs here and not somewhere else?
Honourable the Premier.
You know, Mr. Speaker, I think the Liberals have to be responsible for more accidents in Nova Scotia than any other group, because they signal left and then they turn right, Mr. Speaker. That's the Liberal Party, Mr. Speaker. Nobody could have been responsible for more corporate welfare anywhere in this country than the Liberal Party. They did it consistently with federal government. They did it here in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, time and time and time again. We are investing in real jobs. We're investing in jobs in rural communities right around the province, Mr. Speaker, to ensure that Nova Scotians and young Nova Scotians have a place that they can work, a place, strong rural communities, and we understand that the leader of the Liberal Party is against that.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Conference Board of Canada actually studied 46 mid-sized municipalities across Canada, and one of them, very interestingly, was the New Glasgow area. And they reported, and I will table this for the Premier, the Conference Board says that New Glasgow's economy shrank every year since 2009. I'll table that for the benefit of the Premier, Mr. Speaker. Glad to hear he's investing in jobs somewhere, but it's not in the New Glasgow area. Meanwhile, Mr. Speaker, the same report says that across Northumberland Strait, the economy of Charlottetown has grown in real terms every year from 2005 to 2012. Even Summerside has expanded every year. But in the case of New Glasgow and area, their economy has shrunk every year since 2009. Mr. Speaker, I'll ask the Premier, despite all his massive taxpayer investments, why has the economy of New Glasgow gone into reverse every year since 2009?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the Conference Board report actually said that Halifax is growing. They pointed out, for example, Mr. Speaker, that Cape Breton's economy, this is one that I'm sure that they will be interested to hear, Cape Breton's economy has grown every year since 2005, with employment in 2012 largely the same as it was in the mid-2000s, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, I noted also the comments in the paper today from the Conference Board. They said it was likely that the economies in some parts of the province were more hit that cycle at a different time. But, Mr. Speaker, these are the same people who have opposed the investment in DSTN, the investment in Northern, the investments in those communities that actually strengthen and create jobs. They oppose.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, yes, Halifax is growing. I guess that's why the Premier gave the Irvings all that money to build a parking garage down on the waterfront here. But the question was about New Glasgow, Mr. Speaker. We'd certainly support investments that actually created jobs, but the Conference Board report clearly says that the Glasgow area, and I will quote, the region has shed almost 6,000 jobs since 2008. That's a pretty poor investment when you manage to lose 6,000 jobs in exchange for all that money. New Glasgow includes some pretty important employers, Mr. Speaker, like Michelin, like Northern Pulp, like the Sobeys, and many others. But they clearly lost confidence in the Premier's ability to manage the economy because, as a region, they have shed 6,000 jobs. 200 million in jobs here, minus 6,000 jobs. So I'll ask the Premier, how did he manage to spend 200 million and lose 6,000 jobs in the New Glasgow area?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, there is no question that all of the province are subject to the general economic trends in not only North America, but the world for that matter. And so there has been a very difficult recession worldwide. We invested, for example, in Port Hawkesbury to make sure that that asset is up and running today and the 1,000 people associated with it are still working. But I can tell you this. The work that's done in that plant in Port Hawkesbury has ramifications right down through Pictou County, Mr. Speaker. And when those are put under threat, That is exactly what happens. You see declines in employment. And that employment, thankfully, is coming back, that people are going back to work because that asset has now become one of the most productive in North America, if not the most productive in North America. If the leader of the Conservative Party had his way, those people would be on the welfare line.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I will tell you what has had ramifications all through Pictou County, in fact, all across rural Nova Scotia, and that is a government whose policies are to charge them the highest HST in the whole country, to allow their power rates to skyrocket, which causes jobs to go backward, and put in place laws, extreme labour laws like First Contract, which scare the heck out of companies like Michelin and like Sobeys. They can laugh, Mr. Speaker, but minus 6,000 jobs is a serious problem, and it's happened since 2009. Under their watch. But what's so interesting, Mr. Speaker, I'll tell you who has done well in Nova Scotia and in the NDP. Yesterday, Credit Suisse reported that the Maritime Link will boost the earnings of Emera by $70 million starting the very first year. Mr. Speaker, as I'll ask the Premier, why is he giving Emera such a big boost? Well, they all laugh at the loss of 6,000 jobs in New Glasgow.
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, you know, the power rates, the privatization of Nova Scotia Power and the creation of Emera all happened as a result of the policies of Liberals and Conservative governments. Mr. Speaker, what we are doing is making sure we get off of fossil fuels. Mr. Speaker, the rates increase in 2009 were based on the rules put in place by the Conservative government, Mr. Speaker. The reason why we have higher power rates, that's the Conservative government's fault, Mr. Speaker. The reason the HST is where it's at is because they left behind a $1.4 billion deficit, Mr. Speaker. We sorted it out, Mr. Speaker. They should know now that the HST is going back to 13%. Because we're turning a corner, and we are creating more jobs, and we are creating a better future for Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. $60 million tax dollars went to DSTN with the promise of 250 turbines per year and 500 jobs. 3 years later, this promise has failed to materialize, Mr. Speaker. A recent Conference Board of Canada study points out that since 2009, New Glasgow's economy shrank every year and the region shed 6,000 jobs. In fact, Mr. Speaker, things are so unimpressive at DSTN that they had to look to other industries in order to stay afloat. And, Mr. Speaker, it's easy to stay afloat when you're using tax dollars to subsidize your operations. Every entrepreneur in Nova Scotia would certainly like that opportunity. My question. With such disappointing results from his $60 million to DSTN, does the Minister of Economic and Rural Development still think this was wise use of taxpayers' dollars?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, DSTN was an investment in the future of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what DSTN does and continues to do is that they've hired a manager. They're opening up an office here in Halifax, Mr. Speaker. They just recently landed a contract to produce more towers. For another company, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, they are diversifying. They are looking at shipbuilding. They are looking at other ways of investments and making money. Mr. Speaker, I believe in DSTN. I believe that they have a future here in the province of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the Herald on Friday, and as just said by the Minister, the company is quoted as saying, hiring is currently underway for the company's new expanded sales team in Halifax to advance its business development plan. In fact, DSTN is expanding into oil and gas, heavy industrial fabrication, and shipbuilding, Mr. Speaker. This means that they will be competing with businesses who have not, Mr. Speaker, who have not received a $60 million subsidy from the government. Yet again, the minister is using taxpayer dollars to go head-to-head with Nova Scotia businesses for contracts. So my question, will the minister tell Nova Scotian businesses if they are going to have to compete against their own tax dollars to win shipbuilding contracts?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I really don't understand the question because, Mr. Speaker, this is about creating jobs in the province of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, DSTN is competing globally, and we are going to do everything that we can to help them compete, help them create good jobs in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this is a question of economic development decisions and direction by this minister, by this government. We gave a company $60 million, took a 49% stake in that company to build wind turbines. Now it looks as though they're going to abandon that plan and go into another sector with tax dollars supporting their operational costs. So it's certainly something that we should be asking on behalf of the taxpayers of this province. Instead of 250 turbines per year, we have a total of 20, Mr. Speaker. Employment is below one-fifth of what was promised. Now DSTN is in the midst of a business diversification strategy. So after investing $60 million on behalf of taxpayers and taking almost a 50% ownership of DSTN, we have a company that hasn't come close to targets on production or employment. Will the minister tell Nova Scotians if the government will be investing further in DSTN, and will we eventually become the majority owners of this company?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, DSTN is doing the right thing. They've got an additional contract to build towers. One of the solid reasons why they've came to Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, they are investing in Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, they are creating more jobs, good jobs, here in the province of Nova Scotia for Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Last week, I raised the issue with him of the market analyst pointing out that Emera's profits will certainly increase substantially as a result of the way that the Maritime Link deal has been structured with the support of the NDP government. Now, Mr. Speaker, it appears that the Premier is more concerned with Emera's profits than he is with ratepayers. And so, as all the increased profit for Emera comes as a result of ratepayers shouldering the project risk, this is profit which could have instead be used to keep rates lower. So at the end of the day, ratepayers will pay for 35 years, and they won't own anything. They won't own the very thing they're paying the full cost of, the link. So, Mr. Speaker, why does the Premier believe that ratepayers shouldn't own the link after they pay the entire mortgage for 35 years?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the contract calls for the people of Nova Scotia to receive stable energy rates for the entire period of the contract, Mr. Speaker. This means that Nova Scotians will get the lowest, fairest rates available from that project. It will be a stable energy price. It'll be an economic development bonus for Nova Scotia. We will be able to attract more employment and more jobs into the area. Mr. Speaker, this, as the Premier of Newfoundland pointed out when she was here just a short time ago, she said, you know, the number one criticism in Newfoundland and Labrador is that Nova Scotians are getting free power. And Mr. Speaker, they have to point out, Mr. Speaker, that this is a mutually beneficial project for both Newfoundland and Labrador and for Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, there'll be economic development benefits in Labrador. I'm not so sure about Nova Scotia. In fact, all of the information tabled before the board shows at the moment that the rates would be cheaper. And in fact, the energy minister himself said the other day it would be cheaper if we went with the Made in Nova Scotia solution, and I'll table that. You know, Mr. Speaker, so let's go to that. Mr. Speaker, the Premier the other day tried to claim ratepayers would pay 8 cents a kilowatt hour by misrepresenting a Herald article. I'll table that. But Emera says, and I'll table Emera's response to that. Mr. Speaker, I will table Emera's response to that the other day, where they actually say that that's assuming that Nova Scotia would get 20 to 30% of their energy from the link, and also is not the actual rate, and takes all the savings that are accumulated by every other renewable energy project in the province and applies it to the link. And only then, and only if we get 30% of the energy, would the Maritime Link portion be 8 cents? So, Mr. Speaker, would the Premier please tell us what the per kilowatt rate is that residential customers will pay on their bill after the link comes online?
Honorable the Premier.
I mean, I know it is shocking that the member for Dartmouth East would... I mean, they so want this to fail. They so want this not to be a good thing for Nova Scotia that they will try to put the most negative and pessimistic kind of construction on everything. Mr. Speaker, what I tabled the other day were not my words. They were the words, as he pointed out, of a Herald editorial. Mr. Speaker, what we want are the lowest and fairest rates for Nova Scotians. I'm not sure what the members of the Liberal Party want. I'm not sure what the member for Dartmouth East wants. What we want is a strong partnership between the Atlantic provinces that delivers the best local power for all of our region, because we believe that what benefits Newfoundland and Labrador and what benefits New Brunswick will also benefit Nova Scotians. We're trying to build a stronger economy. We are trying to recognize the potential of Atlantic Canada, and we're proud of that.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, most Nova Scotians would not consider Labrador local, but I guess when you get to fly Mira's private jet there, it gets a lot closer. Here's the thing. Actually, they're not part of the Maritimes. They're part of Atlantic Canada. So, Mr. Speaker, education cuts once again. We see why it's so damaging to Nova Scotia. The Premier was talking about an 8-cent blended rate. Well, his own Minister of Energy said in Hansard on May 3rd that wind in Nova Scotia is 7.5 cents. So even the Minister of, and I'll table that, even the Minister of Energy agrees with the evidence before the board that says wind in Nova Scotia would be cheaper than the Maritime Link. You know, so Mr. Speaker, why is the Premier... given that the Energy Minister is now supporting the evidence against the link at the board by quoting an energy rate for wind here, which is cheaper than what he is quoting for the Maritime Link, why is the Premier so opposed to an energy future made in Nova Scotia, which is in the Maritimes, incidentally, rather than tying Nova Scotia to 35 years of energy from Labrador with no guarantees afterwards?
Honourable the Premier.
You know, Mr. Reid, I really think that the member for Dartmouth East believes that he can get away with just simply distorting everything he says and that somehow people in Nova Scotia will believe it. Mr. Speaker, what he is referring to, the 7.5%, is about Pubnico Point, and Pubnico Point is now one of the cheapest conveyors of energy in the province. But when it was built, it was 3.5 cents more expensive. The advantage of Pubnico Point, of course, which is the exact advantage of the Muskrat Link and the exact advantage of new wind that comes on, is that it is stable over the long term, Mr. Speaker, that it provides cheaper rates over the long term, Mr. Speaker. So, unwittingly, which is an apt description, unwittingly, the member for Dartmouth East has just proven the exact point why the investments should be made in infrastructure like the Maritime Link.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the study on mid-sized cities released by the Conference Board of Canada points to devastation across the rural economy. New Glasgow in the 2011 census had a population of 9,562. According to the CBC report, New Glasgow has lost almost 6,000 jobs. And I'll table that report, Mr. Speaker. The impact of poor NDP choices can be felt across the province. So my question to the Minister of ERDT, can the Minister tell the House if the member representing New Glasgow, who also sits in the Cabinet, has ever come forward with concerns about severe job losses? And if so, why has nothing been done in response?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what we've done in the province of Nova Scotia, 2012, we had more people employed in Nova Scotia prior to the recession. Mr. Speaker, that this last Canadian statistics show one province in all of Canada is moving forward. Mr. Speaker, that is Nova Scotia. That's where we are. That's where we will continue to stay.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, a Chronicle Herald article says, economic growth that occurs while the population is flat or declining is a positive thing. But what we're seeing in Glasgow is the opposite. They're still suffering from 2009, and they're still losing jobs. And we still see economic output slowing there. Now, Glasgow's economy shrank every year since 2009, and the region has shed almost 6,000 jobs. My question to the minister is, will the minister finally admit that his jobs plan is a failure in New Glasgow?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we have a plan. We have a plan that is working. After 20 years of decline, 20 years of the worst economic development in Canadian history, we are finally turning the corner, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, now, I know that there are some members in this House that find that very hard to believe because they're simply not used to it. Well, do you know what? As long as this government's in place, my comment is, get used to it.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we'll let the people of Nova Scotia need to know if we need to get used to it or not. Cape Breton's unemployment in 2012 was about the same as it was in the mid-2000s. Truro avoided significant declines during the recession, but economic growth was modest between 2005 and 2012. The NDP have left rural Nova Scotia to crumble. We see our young people moving away, and the ones who remain are largely unemployed. With people between 15 and 24, the unemployment rate is 17.8%. And I'll table that as well, Mr. Speaker. Our caucus has brought these issues up time and time again for 4 years with no answers, no real plans, and no results. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, have the members from Truro or other members representing Cape Breton Centre or Cape Breton Nova come to you to ask for their help in respective areas? If so, why did you ignore them?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what we've done in the province of Nova Scotia in 4 years is that I think it's quite amazing. We've taken a province that was dead last, and Mr. Speaker, we've managed to start to turn things around. We are on the verge of some of the greatest economic opportunities in a lifetime, Mr. Speaker. When I think of the Irvine shipbuilding contract, 11,500 jobs. When I think of what's going on with the Maritime Link, Mr. Speaker, not only about economic development, Mr. Speaker, but lowest energy rates possible, Mr. Speaker. When I think of the investments that this government has made in Michelin, Mr. Speaker, to secure a future for Michelin workers in the province of Nova Scotia, when I think of what this government has done when it comes to cooked aquaculture, Mr. Speaker, securing good jobs and future jobs for Nova Scotians from one end of the province to the other. Mr. Speaker, when I think of Port Hawkesbury New Page, the saving and maintaining of 1,400 direct and indirect jobs, those are the kind of investments that Nova Scotia needs, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we are NDP. Our priority is people.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And my question is for the Minister of the Environment. Mr. Speaker, why does the NDP allow Nova Scotia facilities to accept fracking wastewater from other jurisdictions in Canada?
The Honourable Minister of Environment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. To the member opposite, I know he's raised his questions a number of times. And first of all, I want to tell you that fracking, we understand the concerns of Nova Scotians, and that's why we are in the process of conducting a thorough review, which will be completed in 2014. We understand the sensitivity around this issue, and that's why we're committed to protecting the environment and making sure that industries and companies follow the conditions of their approvals. Thank you very much for the question.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the question was about the disposal of fracking wastewater and importing it. It wasn't at all about what he just talked about. Mr. Speaker, we know, of course, that fracking wastewater has been imported for treatment from New Brunswick, possibly other places, at least 10 million litres so far. And it seems maybe more, about 10 million litres is known of. And it seems that the minister, you know, there's a lot of talk about economy today. It seems the NDP want an economy based on hazardous waste treatment in Nova Scotia, I guess. You know, and now the minister seems more concerned with... The minister seems more concerned with protecting the company rather than answering questions. On April 22nd, during environment estimates, he said, and I quote, "I am protecting the company, and there is privileged information." Mr. Speaker, I'll table that section of the environment estimates debate. At the time, we asked him to get back and indicate why or what would be privileged, since it didn't seem to be the case. So, Mr. Speaker, the minister has had time since estimates to consider his position. He changed his position on Otter Lake since estimates, as you'll see in the same transcript. So will the minister today release the test results for fracking wastewater treated anywhere in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Environment.
Again, I want to thank the member opposite. And yes, we had you engaged in the budget estimates, and certainly we are there to respect the protocol regarding privileged information, and we'll respect that. But I want to tell you, to the members all in this House, is that we take this issue very seriously, and I want to echo again that there's a thorough review. And this government, Mr. Speaker, we have never allowed a permit for fracking. Unlike the opposite parties, the PCs that actually allowed this, and the Liberals asked the questions. We inherit a mess. The oppositions asked the questions, and we'll clean it up as usual. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth South on his final supplementary.
So, Mr. Speaker, the Minister's answer is we're the NDP and we're not as bad as the Tories. I mean, that'll really make Nova Scotians happy about this. You know, Mr. Speaker, the fact is that the Minister was asked in other jurisdictions. The minister talks about privileged information, yet other jurisdictions have released this very information. So it appears to be only privileged in Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, in May 2011, the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection actually asked the state's treatment plants to stop processing fracking wastewater. I can wait, Mr. Speaker, until they're quiet. Asked the state's treatment plants to voluntarily stop processing fracking wastewater. And this was because it was found the treatment plants actually can't process the material and that watersheds and areas around were seeing high bromide levels. Mr. Speaker, it's this minister who's responsible for the industrial permit that Atlantic Industrial operates, and it's this minister that permitted fracking waste from outside Nova Scotia to be treated in this province. Not any other party, not any other minister. Mr. Speaker, will the minister immediately prohibit future importation of fracking waste from outside Nova Scotia? And if not permanently, at least until the fracking review is complete.
The Honourable Minister of Environment.
Well, to the member opposite, Mr. Speaker, I'm amazed at the member opposite because I spent my lifetime on the water. And he made reference to Otter Lake and the conditions there. And I make reference to my lifetime on the water because I watched the Bay of Fundy change every 6 hours, the change in direction. The member opposite, Mr. Speaker, when it comes to Otter Lake, talked about changes to approval that the former government, the Liberals at the time, introduced. There was a resolution in this House asking for all support to maintain them conditions, which we have done. We honoured what the public and that community has wanted. Unlike the member opposite, Mr. Speaker, has changed more in the last 2 weeks in the tides in the Bay of Fundy. Thank you for the question.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as Nova Scotians, we owe a huge debt of gratitude to our veterans who have served this country. It was these veterans who made the sacrifices for the free society we enjoy today, Mr. Speaker. They deserve our respect. The least we can do for our veterans is to give them the living conditions and the care they have earned and so clearly deserve. Mr. Speaker, this care includes healthy, fresh food, not frozen TV dinners. My question is to the Minister of Seniors. Can she explain why, when this government goes looking for savings, the first place they look is the food budget for our veterans at Aberdeen Hospital in Pictou County?
The Honourable Minister responsible for seniors.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. This is a question that relates to the Department of Health, so I'm going to pass it along to the Minister.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Veterans hold a very important place in our hearts. All MLAs would agree, Mr. Speaker. That's why we work extremely hard to ensure that they have access to the services they have, Mr. Speaker. With the question that the member asked, what has happened in the District Health Authority is that they went forward and heard the concerns of the residents, heard the concerns of their family members, heard the concerns of the community, Mr. Speaker, and put together an organization or a group to look at, a task force, to look at recommendations and how you could improve services for our seniors. And they did just that, Mr. Speaker, and I look forward to them implementing all of the recommendations from that task force that reviewed the food services for our veterans in Pictou County, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, a good quality of life should include healthy, wholesome, non-frozen food. This food should be offered to our veterans as well. Veterans occupy a special status in our society, and they should not be disrespected by denying them the food they deserve. So can the minister justify forcing a health authority to save $70,000 by feeding veterans TV dinners instead of cutting its wasteful $1.4 million subsidy to food outlets in Halifax hospitals?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Mr. Speaker, I respect the minister, the member opposite. I really do. But he's not indicating exactly forthright what's going on. They're not served TV dinners, Mr. Speaker. I want to make that very clear today in this House. They are not being served TV dinners, Mr. Speaker. That's why the District Health Authority, when they made recent changes, they went out into the community. They asked for input from the community. They had people from the Legion, Mr. Speaker. They had concerned siblings and children of veterans who were actually living at the facility, Mr. Speaker, to see what they could do to improve conditions. And Mr. Speaker, out of that were recommendations that the District Health Authority has accepted, and they will implement all those recommendations that a group of individuals from all sides who were concerned with the food of the veterans. What they want to ensure is that they get the healthy food that they need, Mr. Speaker, and the respect that they deserve.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, at a special meeting of the Veterans Affairs Committee just a week ago, one of the gentlemen whose father-in-law is a member of the Veterans Wing was there and said that his father-in-law had been fed a type of fish. The man had been a fisherman all his life, and yet he could not recognize the fish that he was fed through this new program that they're providing food for. So if quality of life is so important, how come even he couldn't recognize the food that was being fed to him? Is that the way we treat our seniors and our veterans in this province? I certainly hope not. The government has strained our health authority budgets to the point where they're forced to compromise the nutrition and the enjoyable qualities of food veterans are used to getting, and they used to get. Mr. Speaker, can the minister give Pictou County veterans the respect they have earned and deserve and instruct the Pictou County Health Authority to immediately reinstate nutritious meals that are prepared on site?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I think through my career here as an MLA, I've shown nothing but respect to our veterans. And I think all members of this House has done that. What the member opposite is saying, he's not forthright with Nova Scotians. And I take my job seriously as Minister of Health. We've worked with district health authorities across the province to ensure that we have a sustainable health care system. A sustainable healthcare system, Mr. Speaker, so that we don't have to do the cuts that we've seen in the 90s, so that we can ensure that services are provided, especially to our veterans, Mr. Speaker. So I'm going to continue to work with the district health authorities. I'm going to continue to work with all those who had input in the review of the food to ensure that they get the respect they deserve, Mr. Speaker, as seniors and as veterans.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. The Department of Natural Resources currently has a helicopter within its fleet of assets that can be periodically used by staff or cabinet members or, I guess, any departmental staff if it matters pertinent to the department. Now, of course, throughout their time in opposition, the NDP were very critical of the previous government and their use. So my question for the minister is, in the interest of ensuring the appropriate use of this helicopter, would the minister please table in the House by noon tomorrow the logbook for the Department of Natural Resources helicopter, including the flights and, of course, the passengers, which would be in that log for the past 4 years?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, we're fortunate in Nova Scotia to have a very qualified helicopter fleet. We have five helicopters that serve our province to the Department of Natural Resources. They're there for in need of firefighting primarily, but certainly have other duties as well. Certainly, during estimates, I didn't hear this question from the Honourable Member, but I'll endeavour to get the information as soon as it's available.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate that from the Minister. I wonder if he might also then table a list of, if he would list the helicopter and airplane flights that were chartered for staff and minister use in the province of Nova Scotia over that same period of time.
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Of course, the province does not own any airplanes, so there's no air flights to file or get information for. But again, on the helicopters, I'll endeavour to get that information.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the question was for aircraft that have been chartered, aircraft or helicopters that would not be owned by the government but have been chartered for flights by ministers, political staff, and the departments within the province of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Obviously, the Honourable Member is running out of questions because that certainly does not fall under the purview of the Department of Natural Resources, but I'll get the helicopter information for the Honourable Member.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. The current provincial regulations on apprenticeship are needlessly limiting opportunities for young trade workers trying to break into their fields and start their careers. Even with federal and provincial grants and tax credits, it's the extra red tape at the provincial level that's holding them back from being hired. So my question through you to the Minister, will the Minister remove the red tape restraining these young tradespeople from working?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We'll sure try because all that red tape was put in by his government. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, let me be clear. The effective journey person apprenticeship ratio is to reduce the number of people who work in a trade. And according to a recent report of the C.D. Howe Institute, and I quote, the trades in provinces with strictest journeyperson apprentice ratio have lower levels of young workers. This suggests that these regulations may be acting as barriers to entry. And that's exactly, Mr. Speaker, what's happening in this province. And I will table that. So my question through you to the Minister, why is the government choosing high salaries of the lucky few who find work while saying tough luck to the majority of young workers who are being held back by this red tape?
Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
It's a timely question, if not totally inaccurate, Mr. Speaker, but I'm going to tell you something. That, you know, ratios, we inherited ratios, Mr. Speaker. It was that group over there that put them in. So what we are doing, though, Mr. Speaker, so we'll be perfectly clear, is that we are working on apprenticeship training now, and we're working with workers and with labour to find out what are the best ratios to use, Mr. Speaker. We're not going to rely on their 1960 model. We're going to use a new model, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One of the problems there, if it's workers and labour, we're leaving the employer out.
That's right.
You know, recently there's been encouragement by the federal government for young workers to enter the trades. Now is the opportunity for this government to stand up for young Nova Scotians looking to begin their careers and modernize this legislation. The minister says we're working on it. For 2 years, they've been working on it. So my question to the minister, will the minister finally update the regulations on apprenticeship so young Nova Scotians can put their valuable skills to use?
Good question. The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Look, Mr. Speaker, he is right. I misspoke. I meant to say workers and employers. These are people from all across the province, Mr. Speaker, that are, as we speak, as we're in this House today, are working on these issues. An issue that they deliberately, I would suggest, Mr. Speaker, ignored. And they're saying these things today. Mr. Speaker, we are working forward with this. We would want their help to help move this forward. We have merit contractors working with us. We have unionized contractors with us, Mr. Speaker. We have workers from all the trades, whether they have to be put in place or not, Mr. Speaker. But we do. We've been working on it. Those guys ignored it, Mr. Speaker. What part of that don't they get?
The Honourable Member for King's West.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Years of tumultuous negotiations under the former Conservative government have left paramedics in this province frustrated. 2 years after the most current agreement between paramedics and EMC has expired, this ugly history could very well repeat itself. The paramedics we have heard from are angry, and this anger is shared equally amongst all parties involved in the negotiating process, including government. The first contract was rejected by a vote of 98%, and many paramedics are telling us the new contract being voted on right now is not much different than the previous contract rejected. Could the minister please tell us whether he has been actively working with EMC on a contingency plan in the event of a strike, yes or no?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I know both sides have worked extremely hard to try to come to an agreement that can be ratified by the paramedics. I'm not going to negotiate any contract on the floor of the legislature. I believe in collective bargaining. We've said that so many times here in the legislature. I think there's a process in place for them to try to resolve and come to an agreement, and I look forward to the paramedics and EMC doing that.
The Honourable Member for King's West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Emergency services on our roads and in our homes, paramedic services in nursing homes and emergency departments, and yes, Mr. Speaker, even our collaborative emergency centres are not immune should paramedics decide to strike. Nova Scotians deserve to know what will unfold should the most recent contract be rejected. Voting is happening now, and the results of this vote could be known as early as week's end. Could the minister indicate the details of his contingency plan, or will binding arbitration serve as this government's contingency plan?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And from all from what I understand, that voting isn't taking place today. They were working on trying to get that handle on that. We have a large province. I know the union themselves need to facilitate that. And I am confident that both sides will be able to work through this. That's why we have collective bargaining, Mr. Speaker. That's why there's a process in place. And I look forward to that process coming to, a positive ending. And I look forward to continuing to support our men and women who are paramedics across this province in whatever environment they choose to work in, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for King's West on a new question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the original promise of high-speed internet for all Nova Scotians was to be completed by 2010. At the present time, there are still hundreds in the southwestern part of the province who do not have high-speed access. In fact, a couple of hundred in the member for Digby Annapolis alone. Mr. Speaker, access to high-speed internet is an important service. It's really a rural economic development issue. And here we are over 3 years later with hundreds of Nova Scotians without access. Mr. Speaker, 3 years later, will the Minister of Economic and Rural Development explain why we are still waiting to make sure that rural Nova Scotia have this technology available to these 1,000 Nova Scotians, and why the penalties for late completion of this service was waived?
The Honourable Minister Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I thank the member for the question, a very important one. My first response to the member opposite is that, first of all, when it comes to broadband, is that it was a project that, in my opinion, that it was underestimated, that the government and the suppliers, the service deliveries agents of today didn't fully grasp the magnitude of the problem. Having said that, Mr. Speaker, we are working on solutions. We are attempting to make sure that all Nova Scotians have access to broadband. Right now, it's fair to say that we are one of the most connected jurisdictions in the world. We are at 99%. We recognize that there's in the world of fairness, there's about 800 or less. Less than 800 people that do not have connectivity. We are working, and actually the member would know that there's been an experimentation, a pilot program taking place up in the valley to see if we can provide those remaining families and individuals and organizations with high-speed internet.
The honourable member for King's West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I'm going to ask the minister about that very pilot project, because Eastlink currently has that project in place where they are providing high-speed access direct from satellite to home, and the project is proving to be very successful. However, Mr. Speaker, in order to be able to fully embrace this technology, government needs to change the original contract. This will allow them greater flexibility to ensure that all Nova Scotians will have access to high-speed internet service. My question to the minister, when will government make the necessary change to the contract and allow providers the flexibility to complete the high-speed initiative as promised?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, with respect to that test, is the results in the analysis have not come through to my desk yet, so we are not going to make any determination until I receive the full contents of what that testing revealed and what the analysis is. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the renowned Cabot Trail is noted throughout the world for its beauty and its people. Over the past number of years, reconstruction of the Victoria County portion of the Cabot Trail has taken place. Reconstruction, I must note, that was started by the PC government in 2007. So my question through you to the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal, does his department plan on paving a portion of the Victoria County section of the Cabot Trail this year?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank my friend for that question, because it's a question that I think he's asked earlier directly to departmental members and our staff, and I understand that the answer has been given to him. We have been paving on the Cabot Trail consistently for the last number of years. In the five-year plan, we've indicated what we're going to be doing. This year, we will be paving on the Cabot Trail, unfortunately not in Victoria County, but in Inverness County. We intend to maintain our efforts to improve the Cabot Trail. We know full well what a valued asset that is to not only to Cape Breton but to the province. And our work is going forward. Last year we did a significant portion in Victoria County. In fairness, I thought this year we should do some work in Inverness County. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes on his first supplement.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Without getting into an argument with the member from Inverness, who deserves it more, we'll just move on. Mr. Speaker, the 2012-13 five-year capital plan said that a section of the Cabot Trail in Victoria County from Little River southerly for 6.3 kilometres would be done. The 2013-14 five-year plan, it's not there. So I guess the government has been trumpeting the five-year plan so the people will know the projects that are taking place. So I guess my question to the minister would be, why was that section in the 2012-13 five-year plan, but not in the 2013-14 five-year plan?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal.
Yes, thank you again, Mr. Speaker. And again, it's an important question because I understand that he's concerned about his constituents and what they're looking forward to having. That portion of the road that he's talking about will be done next year. The reason, and I should tell members so that they'll know this, this isn't just a one sort of layer of preservation pavement. This is a total reconstruction of that road, and it's very, very expensive to do that kind of work. As I said, a large portion of our efforts are being spent on the Cabot Trail. It was a fairness issue to me. I intend to get that work done. It will get done next year. From my point of view, last year the paving plan started in Victoria County. We had paving on the Cabot Trail as well in Victoria County. Again, I determined that going forward, that road will get done. It'll get done next year. We're going to Inverness this year.
The Honourable Member for Victoria de Lakes on his final supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, I think the minister's trying to get an argument going between the member from Inverness and myself. But I have to say, Mr. Speaker, that I appreciate what the minister has said about the additional paving that was done in the Bay St. Lawrence and White Point area, 27 kilometres to be exact, and it's very much appreciated by the people that live there. But we also have to keep in mind that those same people that live north of Smoky travel that road, most people, every day of the week to get to Englishtown Ferry if they have doctor's appointments in Bedeque or wherever the case might be. And I still can't understand why it went from being in the plan 1 year to not being in the next. So what good does the five-year capital plan actually do for those that want to know what's going to be taking place?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the five-year plan is a plan that we put forward. This year was our fourth edition. Last year we got 97% of the work done that we intended to do. I can't indicate more than that. It is a plan. Sometimes when you have plans, you make some alternative changes. It's not as if we've taken this off the list or told the people in that area that we're not going to get the work done, Mr. Speaker. That work will get done. As I said, for me, I looked at going forward. It was time that another area other than Victoria County got some attention, and I decided on Inverness. I like Cape Breton. I like the Cabot Trail. The work is being done on the Cabot Trail. We can't do it all in 1 year, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the data is clearly showing that province-wide, our economy is at a standstill, and when you look specifically at rural areas, our rural communities are actually in a recession. Yet we have a Minister of Economic and Rural Development who stands up and a Premier who stands up and says that they have a plan and their plan's working. I would like the Minister of Economic and Rural Development to present the data that would suggest that his plan is working.
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I think the proof is in the pudding. When I hear Statistics Canada blow our horn and how well we are doing with respect to job and job creation in the province of Nova Scotia compared to the rest of Canada, I think that's a testimony in itself, Mr. Speaker. When I look at going across rural Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, and I look at the investments that we were able to make in Shelburne Shipyard, Mr. Speaker, when I look at the investments that we were able to make in the member that's asking the question in TriStar, TriStar in Yarmouth, Mr. Speaker, that helping them to expand. When I look at the investments that we made in Ontario and Sun Shipyard in Matagan, Mr. Speaker, I think this is another. When I look at the investments that we made in the Marine Centre in Yarmouth, Mr. Speaker, it's and how we enabled them in the municipality to host the World Junior Championships, which, again, they are hosting again, Mr. Speaker, this year. And, Mr. Speaker, we remain at the table with them.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his first supplementary.
See, Mr. Speaker, this is the problem. While the Minister can list off a bunch of commitments and so-called investments, he can't point to one single economic piece of data that would indicate that his plan is actually working for Nova Scotians. If you look at the number, if you look at the actual data, since this government took over in 2009, there's been a 6% increase in unemployment for southwest Nova Scotia alone, and currently in that region there are 7,400 people that are unemployed. Wow. According to the government's own employment projections and their budget, that will be 1,100 fewer jobs in the coming year, Mr. Speaker. So my question again to the minister, are these pieces of information acceptable to him, or will he finally admit that his job isn't working for Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, what I think I'm hearing the member say is that he wouldn't invest in TriStar Industries, Mr. Speaker. What I think I hear the member opposite saying, Mr. Speaker, that he wouldn't invest in Matagan, in the community of Matagan, Ontario, and Sun. All those investments that we've made in the southwest region, what I'm hearing the member say, that we shouldn't have done. And I would think that it's somewhat contagious, because I also think that the member may think that the investments that we made in Port Hawkesbury, New Page, that we shouldn't have worried and saved those 1,400 jobs and see the mill turn around to what it is today, Mr. Speaker. I'm hearing that Shelburne Shipyard, and I can remember when we made the investment in Shelburne Shipyard, I can remember some members opposite saying what we were doing, investing in a Shelburne Shipyard. Mr. Speaker, the Shelburne Shipyard has bounced back and has continued to bounce back. Mr. Speaker, those are economic investments, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, anybody watching this debate knows I didn't say any of those things. In fact, what I'm saying is, looking at the data, the unemployment rate in southwestern Nova Scotia currently stands at 13.2%. That is unacceptable. That's what I'm saying. And I'm saying that this minister's investments and so-called plan isn't working, and all the data would show that. So my question is to the minister, does he think a 13.2 unemployment rate is acceptable, or will he admit that
order,
his plan...
Order, please. The oral questions put by members to minister has expired. I will now recognize the Honourable Government Host Leader to call government business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, could you please call public bills for second reading?
Public bills for second reading. The Honourable Government Host Leader.
Could you please call Bill 82?
Bill number...
Can I steal this from you?
82? The Provincial Flag Act. The Honourable Member for Guysborough Sheet Harbour.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and it gives me great pleasure to rise today. Before I speak to the bill, I would like to, or I beg leave to make an introduction.
Oh, certainly.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today.